Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, bringing you another weekly look at the world of non-league football. Yes, this week we preview non-league finals day on Sunday with super stat man Phil Annetts, the man chosen to supply insight for the match day programme, and the man for whom the FA Vars and FA Trophy have always had a little bit of extra magic. Next up, a chairman who saw his side to playoff glory at the weekend with unexpected promotion to step three, but he's spending his Thursday evening a few days later operating the scoreboard as the club are hosting a youth cup final. Mark Bantock is chairman by name and multiple roles by nature at Uxbridge FC, an unincorporated members club he's proud to be custodian of into its next chapter. There's more playoffs and more managerial moves from Matt Badcock rounding up the week's news for the non-league paper. But before all of that, the winners and losers of 2024-25 so far. Congratulations and commiserations to the following. From the National League, promoted to the Football League, Barnet FC, along with one from the playoffs, still to be decided, from York City, Forest Green Rovers, Rochdale, Oldham Athletic, FC Halifax Town and Southend United. Relegated from the National League, though, Dakenham and Redbridge, Maidenhead United, AFC Fylde and Ebbsfleet United. At step two, we see National North winners, Brackley Town, with either second place finishers Scunthorpe United or fourth place Chester joining them in step one, their playoff final on Sunday the 18th of May. At the other end, dropping down, Needham Market, Rushall Olympic, Warrington Town and Farsley Celtic. Also at step two, Truro City were final day National South winners, and their playoff final sees fifth place Boreham Wood host seventh place finishers of Maidstone United, bidding to get back to the top tier. That game also on Sunday the 18th of May. Relegated from National South, St Albans City, Welling United, Weymouth and Aveley. At step three, the Northern Premier League champions were, of course, Macclesfield, and they're joined in promotion by second place finishers Worksop Town, who won the playoffs. Relegated from the Northern Premier League Premier Division, Matlock Town, Micklover, Batesford United and Blyth Spartans. In the Isthmian League, the champions were crowned on the final day. They're Horsham and they're joined on promotion party duty by the fifth place side Dover Athletic, who were victors in the playoff final. Relegated to step four, Hendon, Hastings United, Bognor Regis Town and Bowers and Pitsey. In the Southern League Premier Central, the winners were Bedford Town, with AFC Telford United celebrating with them, having turned their third place finish into a playoff final win. Dropping down from step three to step four, Barwell, Lowestoft Town, Hitching Town and Biggleswade Town. Merthyr Town won the Southern League Premier South and promotion, and they're joined in that elevation by AFC Totten, who ran them close but finished runners-up before winning their playoff final. Suffering relegation from step three, Winchester City, Swindon Supermarine, Frome Town and Marlow. At step four, the Northern Premier East Division winners were Cleethorpes Town, and they're joined in promotion by playoff penalty winners Stocksbridge Park Steels, who had finished the regular season in third place. Not so many celebrations, however, for the relegated Brighouse Town, Sherwood Colliery, Liversedge and Sheffield. Northern Premier Midlands Division winners by 18 points were Quorn, and joining them in promotion are Worcester City, winners of their playoffs after a fourth place finish. Heading down are Rugby Town, Leigh Town, Grantham Town and the defunct Walsall Wood, already placed bottom of the table. Widnes won the Northern Premier League West, and second place Henderson Town go up alongside them after winning the playoffs. Going out, Withenshaw Town, Withenshaw, Hanley Town and City of Liverpool. The Isthmian North soared Brentwood Town, crowned top dogs, and second place finishers Bury Town go up via the playoffs. Relegated to Step 5, Haringey Borough, Ipswich Wanderers, Basildon United and Sporting Bengal United. In the Isthmian South East, Ramsgate were champions on 109 points, whilst third place Burgess Hill Town won out on penalties in the playoff final. Heading down to Step 5, Phoenix Sports, Staining Town Community, Hythe Town and Lancing. Farnham Town were the runaway winners in Isthmian South Central, whilst this week's guest Uxbridge, who had finished runners-up, also won the playoffs to follow them in the promotion trail. In the bottom four, Guernsey, Ashford Town, Middlesex, Sutton Common Rovers and Bagshot Lee. The Southern League Central was won at a canter by Real Bedford, and Bearcaps did runners-up to them were the emphatic playoff winners 5-0 on Monday. Relegation comes to Kings Langley, Kidlington and Northleigh from the Southern League Central. In the Southern League South Division, Yatetown are promoted as champions and runners-up Evesham United go with them after winning the playoffs. Helstone Athletic, Thatcham Town, Cribbs and Cinderford Town are all relegated to Step 5. And of course, congratulations must go to all those winners and promoters right across the pyramid. Now, time to sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So Sunday sees non-league finals day 2025 at Wembley. FA Vars final at 12:15 PM kickoff, and the FA Trophy final kicking off at 4:15. Ticket sales appear to be selling well by all four clubs involved, and as ever, there'll be a large contingent of neutrals there to soak up the atmosphere. One of those will be our very own man in the know, our statistician of choice, and well, general all-round great bloke. So ahead of his big day, or the big day out at least, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the Non-League Football Show at FA Vars Fact File, at FA Trophy Facts, Mr. Phil Annetts. Welcome back, Phil.
Good to be back, Tim. Thanks very much for having me ahead of the big finals day this weekend.
Well, it is a very big non-league finals day, isn't it? It's always an important day in the calendar, but this time out, it's extra special.
It is extra special. We've got four teams in two finals, all of which are competing in those finals for the very first time. So we're getting new names on trophies, excitement guaranteed throughout the two games. Very much looking forward to it. Just hope the weather holds for us to have great conditions too.
I very much hope the weather holds out for us as well, because I've been up in that Wembley media gantry before on non-league finals day in shorts and also in about 19 layers. So these days are always very varied. Of course, as well, we kick off with the FA Vars, and it's a very big birthday for the FA Vars final as well on Sunday.
Yes, it is. It's the 50th anniversary of the Vars. So first competed for in 1975. Obviously, this is the 51st final. It's one of those anomalies that we have to get our head around. But it is the 50th final. And it's already had 42 different clubs lifting the Vars in that time. With the 43rd guaranteed on Sunday. If you compare that, say, to the FA Cup, which has been going for over 150 years, there have only been 44 different wow. FA Cup winners. So we're almost at the same level of different winners in a third of the time, which just highlights the nature of this wonderful competition, in that it is open to any one of the clubs that takes part in it right at the start of August. And as I've said it many times, I call it the egalitarian cup, because it does give everybody the same amount of chance each season of being able to walk out at Wembley Stadium in May.
And that is just that extra little bit of magic that we have with these non-league finals, and you know, extra magic as well now that we have these non-league finals on the same day. You know, some of us remember the campaign to try and get them onto the same day. You know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But the other thing I think about that number of winners, it's probably helped in spreading the word about non-league far and wide, you know, both within this country, the British Isles, but across the world as well. Because we know there's always a number of people that come over for non-league finals day from, you know, the other side of the world.
They do, and they'll be coming to watch clubs that they may not even have heard of participating in a match, or at least never have seen before. And each year, as we said, it's different clubs every time. And you know my favourite stat about the FA VARs that doesn't really need to be repeated, but the fact that we always have a team in the final that's never been there before. And this year with AFC Whiteleaf and Whitstable Town, we have two teams appearing in the final for the very first time. So two new clubs for anybody who just turns up for these occasions to watch.
And we'll come back to those in a minute, but I suppose I should mention as well about that first final just over 50 years ago, Epsom and Yule against Hoddesdon Town. They had a special guest there too.
They did indeed. Not that most of us knew it, but I was in attendance at that game as a 10-year-old lad who was just about getting into football big style. Living in Epsom at the time, so got caught up in that wave of excitement, looking forward to going to Wembley for, as I'd seen it on TV, you know, thousands and thousands of people, a big crowd, and when we got there, it was about just shy of 10,000 there, and we all stalled together in one part of the stadium. It felt a little bit of an anticlimax, especially as Epsom went on to lose the game as well. So great. To have been there, very serendipitous for what I now do in terms of the FA VARs and the coverage that I give it. So it's nice to have that link back to the very first final 50 years ago.
And I think I learned something recently from the magic of your posts, that the FA VARs drew you even earlier than that, because your first ever football match was an FA VARs match in that run.
Well, it was, yes. I got dragged along to the semi-final, as is often the case now with clubs who get close to Wembley, and the excitement in the little town or the small village that the club is involved in. Lots and lots of people would end up going for the very first time, and I was one of those that my older brother took me along to watch them play against Stamford in the first leg. I wasn't really sure at the time what it was I was attending. It was a fantastic day. That Epsom and Yule, they won the game. I didn't know at that time that meant they were going to Wembley. It was quite a nice surprise to find a few weeks later that I was able to go along and watch them play in the final. So first ever match was an FA VARs match.
Yeah, and then we've got AFC Whiteleaf against Whitstable Town. Is that a W derby or not? Where does that feature on your list?
Yeah, I mean, tendency now for Phoenix clubs to call themselves AFC something means that are they an A or are they the initial of the club that they're replacing. So yeah, let's take it as a WVW final, why not?
Yeah, well, then AFC Whiteleaf of the Combined Counties League, who we had earlier on in the season, they probably would have expected to wrap up their league programme before now, but they're still having to wait on their playoffs. What an achievement already. Whatever happens now, the club are making history.
Well, they are, yes, indeed. I mean, it's only their third campaign in the FA VARs, and they are this season's joint top scorers as well, making it all the way to the final. So fantastic season for them. If they can get promotion as well, as well as maybe potentially lifting the VARs, that would be great news for them. But it's not uncommon, is it, for the VARs winners to also get promoted. We often lose them from defending their titles the following season.
And that's the sort of stat that probably Whitstable Town fans probably won't want to hear. They endure playoff heartache in the scaffold earlier this week. They're a bit more experienced in the FA VARs, but as you say, first time here.
Indeed, yeah. They've had 36 campaigns in total, and they'd only really got as far as, I think, the fourth round or so, or fifth round maybe in the past. So to get all the way to the final, it's only three clubs have taken longer to get to the final in the competition's history. So yeah, it's a sign of patience, isn't it? And eventually you'll get there and have your big day out, which is what the VARs offers any club that takes part.
Yeah, but we as I say, we've got two clubs starting with the letter W, the first time they're in the VARs final. W is quite a lucky letter though for FA VARs winners.
Yeah, we've got the number one team in the overall VARs, begins with a W, and several other clubs have also won it. So we have Whitley Bay as big winners of the competition. So they, I think, what, four times winners? I mean, not even a So that's quite impressive. And we've got, I think Wickham was another one that won it. I'm trying to think of all of them now off the top of my head. I think Winchester City may also be past winners, Wimborne Town. So yeah, there's quite a few with W. I think most recent one, Warrington Rylands. I think they were called Warrington Rylands at the time. So yeah, quite a few W's.
The magic of Wembley, headstone. I guess. Is that?
Yeah, yeah, you can see that there's an association there with the venue.
I'm now thinking rather than the arch, they should have had a big W above Wembley, and it would have signified so much more. I suppose we should mention also the FA Trophy, and we got a town derby in this one.
Yeah, we don't often get couples of town in the names in the final of the trophy. It's only the second time we've had two. Aldershot Town hosting Spennymoor Town, and only previous one was FC Halifax Town beating Grimsby Town 7 years ago. So, again, two new clubs in the final. In fact, for Aldershot Town, this is the very first trip to Wembley, I understand.
Yes.
And in all incarnations, they've been going for 99 years, so... Now, again, it's another one of those where patience comes around. Eventually, gets you to a point where you do get to experience that trip up to the Wembley Arch, and hopefully they make the most of their day.
Yeah, I'm not sure what people normally do in Aldershot on a Sunday afternoon, but I'd imagine it'd be fairly quiet in Aldershot because I think they've sold a number of tickets for this game. Their opposition, though, Spennymoor Town, of course, they've got more. More recent, well, Aldershot never been to Wembley, but they were there fairly recently, beating Tunbridge Wells in the final of the FA Vars, and that was 2013. So Spennymoor Town had the opportunity to complete the monopoly set of FA Vars and FA Trophy.
Yeah, it's a fantastic opportunity to get their name in history of becoming only the second club to lift both of the non-league team final trophies, and many people might think they may become the first if they do it, because being unaware that AFC Fylde, who won the trophy recently, they won the Vars under a different name of Kirkham and Wesham, is it? Or Wesham? I never know how you pronounce it. So, yeah, they could create history, and also being outside of step one, it's not a common thing either for clubs from below the top level of the non-league pyramid to lift the trophy as well. So it's a big opportunity for Spennymoor to make excellent historical achievement for themselves.
Yeah, I remember reporting on both the Spennymoor win and the Kirkham and Wesham when the FA Vars. I think they beat Lowestoft Town in the final in 2008, and then it was maybe the week later that they announced that they were going to change their name, which just seemed a bizarre thing at the time. They've obviously gone strength to strength since, so what do I know? But I remember in that Spennymoor Town win at the FA Vars as well, that was back in 2013, but winning manager of the day, of course, Jason Ainsley, still very much involved with the club as director of football. They're going to be they're going to have less fans in the Spennymoor Town section than Aldershot Town, but that doesn't always make the difference in these finals.
No, I don't think it does. Given the way that the fans are situated around the ground, I think it's an atmosphere that will benefit. Well, not really benefit either side, but especially the both sets of players will just soak up the atmosphere of being at Wembley, and the fans either side will make as much noise as they can to encourage their teams. And I think that players on the pitch hear their own fans, whatever the numbers are. And I think the atmosphere for both sides will be on a par with each other.
Yeah, and of course, 50th anniversary of you attending Wembley for the first time. I'm surprised I haven't got a blue plaque up, actually, Phil, because you're not just our favourite Stato, but you seem to be Matchday Publications' favourite Stato as well.
If you're talking about the cup finals content, then yes, there will be FA Vars Stats and Facts and FA Trophy Facts Stats and Facts in the final programme on Sunday. And there should also be FA Cup Fact File Facts and Stats in the FA Cup Final programme a week later.
Let's see, how lucky are we to be able to get you on the show almost every week at the start of the season? And then we let you have a bit of a rest as the season goes on, of course. But it's always a pleasure to get you on. Before I let you go, I should let you remind everybody where they can follow you across social media and get access to all your facts and stats.
Yes, I'm very active on Twitter, /X. This lead up to the 50th anniversary of FA Vars, I'm doing some special tweets regarding the 50 years of the competition. So check that out on @FAVarsFactFile. You can also follow me on FA Trophy Facts and at FA Cup FactFile, both on Twitter /X accounts.
Phil Innitz @FAVarsFactFile, @FATrophyFacts. Always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Cheers, Tim. See you.
Okay then, so we're to our main guest this week, and I wanted to celebrate the end of the season, but also highlight that in reality, there is no such thing. Non-league clubs are now, 24/7, 365 operations, and some may have expected my next guest to be sat maybe poolside with a drink in hand after his club secured Step 3 status for next season via the playoffs last weekend, but no, as chairman of his club, he's back there this evening helping run a youth cup final. To tell us more, it's a pleasure to welcome to the Non-League Football Show chairman at Uxbridge FC, Mr. Mark Bantock. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks, Tim. Very kind of you and an excellent intro. I think that sums up a lot about non-league football, in all fairness.
Well, that's very kind of you to join us, because, I mean, 20 years we've been doing this show. I've interviewed people from beaches, on beaches, poolsides, black tie dos. We've had interviews with people locked in stadiums. We've had people lost in corridors. But I've never interviewed anybody who's in charge of the match day scoreboard. I mean, this is every schoolboy's dream.
It would be. If you've got any schoolboys that are listening to the show and they want to send an email or an application to me, they are more than welcome to come and they're sure they'd be able to do it a lot better than I can, mate. But so thanks for the shout out. We're willing to take anyone and everyone.
And I mean, that's it, isn't it? I mean, let's talk about the magic of being a chairman. Isthmian South Central.
That won't take long.
You had the Isthmian South Central playoff victory. You're in front of a home crowd, a bumper crowd. Has all that sunk in yet?
I've said to everybody all week since Sunday, I was trying to say to everyone, let's have the week to digest it and revel in it and enjoy it. We've got our presentation evening tomorrow evening. So let's get to that. Let's get to Friday. I think I got to about 10 a.m. Monday morning before the panic started setting in and the work started. And I've had various Zoom meetings this week, one with a digital platform, ticket platform supplier. So it doesn't really stop, but it hasn't. I mean, Sunday, for us as a football club, Tim, before the week started, our record attendance at Honeycroft was 354. By virtue of finishing second in the division, we had the home playoff semi-final against Kingstonian on the Wednesday night, and we set a new record of 670. And then by Sunday, that went up to 1,535. And for a club like ourselves, it was a monumental effort to get the game on, is the honest answer. I mean, it was, and hopefully anyone who hears this in the non-league circles, I've repeated it many times. I've gone public with it. We owe a great bit of gratitude to Hamworth Villa, who were our opponents on Sunday, because their team off of the pitch were exceptional with their help to us on the day. They even had two of their own staff man the turnstile for us because they were used to it being online ticketing and the apps and everything like that. So it was a genuinely a non-league family coming together. It was a wonderful day, and obviously for us, with the result as it went, made it all the more sweeter. But it was a general illustration, a vivid illustration of all of what non-league football was about. There was no trouble. We had, you know, obviously there was a large contingent of Hamworth Villa fans, and they would have been disappointed, obviously, at the final whistle, but absolutely no trouble with that. And as I said to everyone within the club, with the greatest respect for the likes of us, we can't control the football. The football was always going to happen for both games, the Wednesday night and the Sunday. Really, for the football side of the club, nothing changes. It's just a game. They turn up at the same time. They do their warm-up. They play the game. The refs are there. We had a fourth official for both games, which was probably the only difference. But for everyone else, it's the same. But for the club and the work involved, and as I say, we are totally a voluntary run organisation. It's all volunteers. For us to be able to put something of that scope on Sunday, bearing in mind, and it's just obviously the unfortunate nature of the playoffs, you can't really plan for Sunday until Thursday morning. And so it was a monumental effort, and I owe an absolute massive debt of gratitude to the myriad of people around the club that pulled together to make sure that, mainly for the 1,500 people that came here on Sunday, irrespective of their allegiance to any team or if they were just coming to watch as a neutral a game of football, hopefully they left Honeycroft on Sunday thinking it was a good experience and a good advert for non-league football.
Well, and I'm a great believer in you create your own luck as well, and it sounds like you had a bit of luck on your side and everybody pulled together, but you guys have been doing things the right way all the way through. As you say, you know, volunteer-led, community-orientated. I don't think many would have put you in the playoff mix at the start of the season, but Danny Edwards did exactly what he needed to do. Playoff secured, as you say, before the final day, giving you that home draw. Was it ever even on your agenda or at the start of the season that you could be playing step-free football next year?
To be honest, we had a very disappointing season last year, and in fairness, it had no bones about it. Basically, in January, I had a long conversation with Danny. We stuck by him at that point, which I think was the right thing to do. And we really had a reset last January. We made the decision that we weren't going to affect the playoff picture last year. So we decided that we would try and have a reset last January to prepare ourselves for this season and try and make the best of it. And we started the season with the expectation that we wanted to be in and around it. Playoffs obviously goes down to fifth, so invariably you're talking almost the top half of the division. You'd like to think towards the end of the season you've got a playoff potential. And then we had an absolutely dreadful start. We lost all our first three games. And to be honest, we played Haribo on the August bank holiday and we were dreadful, got beat 3-0. And me and Danny, we laugh about it now. Obviously, it's a nice thing to be able to laugh about. We had a meeting the next day and we walked in and his first question to me is it coffee or a pint? And we both had a pint. And he said to me, is this the chat? I said, it's not, Dan. I said, but we're obviously getting near the chat. And the conversation finished sort of basically, and I trust his integrity. I'm very lucky to have him as a manager because he has got a lot of honesty and integrity about him. He said, Mark, if this doesn't change around in the next six games, you won't need to make the decision. I will make it for you. But I think it is an underused adjective and verb in non-league football, loyalty and integrity and honesty. I'd like to think we had that between us. And we did show him some loyalty as a club. And he obviously repaid it in spades by where we ended up.
Exciting times. Exciting times on and off the field, because you've got the new 3G pitch in there now. How was that help revolutionise the club both on and off the field and sort of get this community going?
To be honest, Tim, since I've been involved as I've been coming here all my life, but very sporadically since I've had an active involvement in the club, I've always felt that we needed to do things different. We need to be something different. And that's what we tried to do. I mean, I think hopefully we've had a reasonable amount of publicity for it. Fairly sure from all the exposure we had, we were probably the cheapest step four football club in the country. Our adult season ticket was £100. Our concession season ticket was £5. And we charged £5 for an adult on a match day. And I would categorically state now that we will be the cheapest step three football club in the country next season, because that's what we want to do. The club is about the people that use it. It's about the community. We're trying to be different. We have to be different because, not being rude, there is no private individual here putting money in. We need to be self-generating. And I think it's the right thing to do. The club, I'm a custodian of the club. I won't be here forever. Danny won't be here forever. The players won't be here forever. You're all passing through. The club has been in existence since 1871, and we just need to make sure that it's in a better place than when you all say you're leaving it. And for us as a club, we want to be different. We want to be something that we can look around and say we're proud of what we're doing for the people that use the club. That's it. We are a unincorporated member club. The club is owned by the members, so that's what it should be. And the way football is, I think there's a massive detachment now with top level football, Premier League football, and you're just a statistic. You're just a, you know, you haven't got the involvement. I caught myself on Sunday because I was doing the scoreboard again, even for the final, and about 10 minutes, 15 minutes in, when we'd got everyone in the ground, I just sort of looked round, and it was a spectacle that it had never been seen here, and it just sort of, it caught me a little bit in the throat, thinking, wow, like look at what we've done, look at what we're doing, and trying to do it the right way. And we'll have some tough times next year, undoubtedly. You know, it's lovely to have that success, but you're moving into a, you know, and that's what the pyramid is. You're going up the pyramid if you're fortunate enough to do that, and that's going to bring challenges for us as a club. With the greatest respect, the infrastructure behind the club, the honest answer is we're probably not ready. You know, we survive on volunteers and all what Step 3 football is going to bring. We've got a lot of difficult decisions and decisions that need to be made to try and put us on a step, but we'll do it the right way. As I said, I think I spoke to Danny today about, we were talking about players in fairness, and I said, Dan, we need the right characters. That's what we need at the club. If anyone wants to come here and think, oh, we should have been promoted and they're going to have money now and they're coming here in any sort of mercenary way, we don't want them. And, you know, we're good with our players. You know, they come on a Tuesday and Thursday, or their training gear is laid out, put it in a bucket at the end. We wash that. That'll be out there for you next time. We look after them, and they need to want to be here. We're not going to, you know, as you know, at the level we're at this year, you know who won the league, they're going to be in our league again next year. And I've got a great amount of time for Harry and Farnham and all what they're doing there. He's putting his money into non-league football and deserves a great deal of credit for that. But the model, if I can put it that way, the model that Farnham are running can't be the model that we run. Mm. We need to do something different. And the only way we can progress the football club to where we want to do it is take a lot of people with us and try and do that with the community that are around us.
And you, when you're preparing, doing those preparations, are you preparing for the Isthmian League? Because obviously, yeah, clubs like yourself and Hazen, Yedding, Beaconsfield, Hendon, all local clubs have been shuffling to the Southern League in the past. So is that something you've got to consider?
Everyone tells me, and every projection I've seen, and I wish I had the knowledge of knowledge. It's the Southern, I think it's the Southern Premier League. It's the
Southern South.
Basingstoke. Yeah. Yeah, Southern South. Yeah, Basingstoke. Bracknell, Walton, Hirsch, there's some, and Chertsey, obviously there are some relatively local clubs to us, but I said to someone today, I said, what does that mean? I said, well, one of the clubs in our division, and there's a clue in their name, are called Plymouth Parkway. If we do another interview on the way down to Plymouth Parkway, you can have me for about 5 hours. but yeah, so again, that's all totally different. It'd be a massive learning curve for us as a club, and traveling, and as I say, I said to everybody, and they said, what does it mean to the club? Immediately, the names on the team, it's going to cost more in a playing budget, and it's going to cost more in expenses for traveling. And all we need to generate that out of the football club. I don't want or need this football club to make a profit at any time. If we make a profit, if we do anything, we throw it all back into the facility. We're spending a lot of money this summer. We're having a new catering facility outside. We're doing all the toilets in the clubhouse. We're decorating, doing a lot of work in the clubhouse, and that's the right thing to do. I've been personally criticised in the last couple of years that we haven't sort of thrown enough money at the football to progress, but I don't think that's the right model. I mean, we're very proud of the facility we've got now. We've done wonders, but the real achievement is the football club, and what we've done with the facility isn't what we paid for, because obviously the pitch, what you pay for, you'd expect to get that quality delivered. The real achievement is what we've done in and around the club, that we've basically either done ourselves with time and effort, or we've done with what we've raised with the club and decided that we want to improve it that way.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about week in, week out, about the successful clubs are the ones where people feel part of that family. You certainly achieve that. It's your club. But you, as you said before, you're the custodian. You know, people that have gone before you, guys that I knew that are real stalwarts of the club, David Tucker, Alan O'Dell, Alan Holloway, people that have given years to the club, and I sense you'll do exactly the same.
Exactly. I mean, as I say, it always makes me smile, and it's a lovely thing that we can put to bed after Sunday. I think I think it is in excess of 40 years, this football club, rather than being moved geographically, it's never been promoted and it's never been relegated. It was a sort of almost wonderful statistic, but it really highlighted. And I've always said, I don't think it should be put out there as a criticism, because we all in non-league see a lot of situations that, you know, people risk football clubs with what they do and what they do with the budgets and what they do with the money. And when it all goes wrong, you're putting the football club at risk. And I would never, ever allow that to happen. And I don't think anyone here has. There's never really been the only thing you could possibly accuse the club of here, probably not having any great ambition through the years, but certainly nobody was ever putting the club at risk and sort of trying to live above their means. And we're trying to improve. We want to. I have always said since I've been involved there, I probably never believed it. I do genuinely think there is a potential for this football club to be a step two football club. I think we could do it. We're on the pathway to doing it. And I think we're going the right way. Were we ready to go up? People asked me that question a lot of times last week. You can't pick and choose. You don't get the time to choose when you do it. We've done it, fortunately enough. I said to everyone before Sunday, I felt it was a much bigger thing for the team than the club, because I was always fairly convinced that our day would come. It might have been Sunday, it might have been next year, it might have taken us 5 years to do it, but the trajectory of the club was correct. We're going the right way, we're doing it the right way, so we would get our moment in the sun. Sunday was the first chance to put the sun cream on and actually lie on the lounger. And as I say, nobody wanted it more than me. Nobody's got more problems now because it happened than me. But as I say, it was a wonderful thing. But
I introduced you as the chairman, but your website also has you down as acting treasurer. I mean, you're doing the scoreboard, being on the committee.
I am the acting treasurer as well.
It's not so much mountains of paperwork. It's mountains of hats, isn't it? And the ability to juggle and also have a real life as well away from that.
I'm ready to press the button and you can hear the game's about to restart. But yeah, I've been very fortunate. I run my own business, and that's fortunate at the moment. I can manage that. My work-life balance, realistically, for the last 12 or 18 months, and I genuinely mean this, has probably been at least 95% football, 5% work. And I'm lucky because 5 years ago, I wouldn't have had the opportunity to be able to do that. You heard the whistle. I did manage to look down and press the right button. So you'll probably find this game's going to be 8-0 in a minute or 18-4 when we finish the conversation. But it's become a massive part of my life. I didn't ever envisage when I took the role on that it would become what it's become. And as I say, even that, you make a valid point in with where we're going, that element of it really is unsustainable. We need to get more people involved. We need to get more quality people involved to spread the load, spread the workload. And hopefully with the eyes we had on us on Sunday, and obviously the achievement of now being a step three rather than a step four club, those people might come and find us rather than us having to look for them. But again, they need to be the right people. They need to be the people that want to come here. I'm surrounded and very lucky to have a team of people here that dedicate countless amount of hours just for an innate love of the football club, no financial gain. And it's very easy to say you're willing to give your time and effort when you're successful and things are good and you have days like Sunday. And I was genuinely pleased. I wrote some notes in the program for Sunday that, it was a vivid illustration and a payback for the people that put all that in to have a day like that Sunday, to see what their efforts have produced. And they deserve that, because a lot of people have done it for literally decades without the sort of success and the pinnacle of what Sunday turned out to be for the club.
And that's a great way to leave it, as a great thank you. Mark, it sounds like you're about to get very busy, so it's been a pleasure to get you on the Non-League Football Show. We will follow you and get you back on soon, but best of luck. Enjoy the summer, and we'll speak to you soon.
Really appreciate it, Tim. Thanks for your time, and it's excellent the show you do. We do all listening, so thanks for the time to just give us a bit of exposure for the football club. I really appreciate it.
It is time of the week, then time of the season as well, to head on over to Non-League Paper Town. It's time to welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, editor at large at the Non-League Paper, Mr. Matt Badcock. Welcome back, Matt.
Hi, Tim. Thank you very much.
Well, it's always a pleasure to get you on. We're nearly there, Matt. The week ahead, though. Massive games this weekend. National Game Awards next week. Playoffs next week. I hope you've had some sleep.
I'm certainly not getting any much at the moment. That's for sure. Yeah, we're nearly there, but it does feel it feels like there's still a lot to happen, isn't there? But this is the fun part of the season, and from a journalist's point of view, sort of the added jeopardy of whether you're going to get a hold of somebody who you text or whether they've gone off to. Seems to be Marbella. Seems to be the
is that where they all are?
Sort of summer destination for footballers this year.
Yeah, it's you're too young to remember Crackerjack, but it's sort of like that last bit at the end of the show where they were piling stuff on top of them, and then you had to grab hold of things and not drop them to keep hold of them. And I feel like my contacts and, you know, just say people flying here, there, and everywhere and disappearing into holes, and it's not the easiest of times to be a non-league football journalist. But I suppose we should start with non-league finals day on Sunday. Two very evenly poised matches. Very excited for us to be there, but very exciting for all involved because all of those clubs are hoping to have their names etched on their respective trophies for the very first time. We spoke to Phil Annetts earlier in the show on the stats of things, but emotions, have you had any insight this week about how those involved with the respective clubs are feeling?
Well, I think I've been sort of delegated a lot of that work out this week because we've got so much on, but all the sort of the pieces have been flying in, and you can kind of see from the sort of copy that's being filed to us from all our guys that the people are really looking forward to it. The excitement's building. Also, I've got their press conference tomorrow on Friday, and it is that, you know, that kind of fun part before the big event, isn't it, where everyone can kind of sort of talk about the big occasion. And, you know, I'm sure they're all kind of haven't stopped thinking about it all week, all four teams and all the preparations and whatever they're doing, where they're going. And you've seen Justin Rose goal for today. Sort of he's revealed his bag for his next two tournaments, including the PGA next week, with the with Aldershot's badge on, because he's a sort of a local lad. So the excitement really is building for it. And as you say, it's going to be two ties you know you really can't call. I know sort of Aldershot obviously will start the trophy as favourites because of the fact they're National League, but Spenmore have knocked off a couple already, haven't they? Obviously beat Rochdale in the semi to get there as well, and going to try and do the non-league double, having won the Vars before as well. So it's I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a great day. Hopefully the weather's good, and we can just enjoy two really good games of football that are won by good play and not mistakes or referee decision, that kind of thing. And it's going to be, I think Aldershot taking up 18,000 or so tickets have they sold. So, you know, going to be a great occasion. I've not seen what the others have sold, but I'm no doubt they'll be, you know, Whiteleaf and Whistler, I'm sure, will be getting backed heavily as well. And yeah, it's going to be a fantastic day under the arch.
Yeah, we spoke with Phil earlier about the magic of these finals and how it helps spread the word about non-league. But as you mentioned there, Justin Rose, there's the time of year when celebrities that are out with friends of friends of friends of friends of the chairman or players all submit their own little videos, don't they, in support of the clubs. It just pushes the message out about non-league football and how important these games are.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, there's probably different opinions about the finals being on the same day, but it really does give that kind of focal point, you know, that great occasion for everyone, sort of, you know, all eyes on non-league, and for, you know, you see so many neutrals kind of going to the games as well, don't you? It's not just the fans of each of the four teams. There's, you know, there's people who just love non-league and want to go and see what happens. And, you know, obviously we're among those. So it's going to be, going to be another really fascinating afternoon. I'm sure there's plenty of twists and turns. And will that Vars final go to extra time? It doesn't tend to, does it? We've sort of seen in recent years, and there's sort of like a bit of a gap in the middle. So will they, you know, we can get a breather before the second game. But they, yeah, it's going to be. Oh, yeah, I wouldn't want to call it sat here now. And it's just really looking forward to it. And as you say, that sort of real spotlight on football, and also, you know, the opportunity for them all to play at Wembley is going to be a special one. But I think particularly for the for those Vars players as well, where it's, you know, this is their one chance at it, really, playing on such a prestigious pitch, you know, with so much history and everything that's kind of attached to it. So yeah, really looking forward to the day. And yeah, just kind of it's one of those where you sort of wish you're out there, don't you?
Yeah, if only I could turn the clock back many, 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 many years. Yeah, but as you say, there's lots of neutrals there as well, and it's always like a who's who, isn't it? It's a bit like Where's Wally, spotting the non-league managers of past, present, and future in the crowd. Obviously, you know, they might be impressed by the players on the field.
Yeah, definitely, and that's we've seen again in the past how many players can use these platforms to really sort of push on. You know, you think about only a few years ago, Elliot Nevitt, when he's scoring loads of goals for Warrington Rylands, and now he's playing in the Football League, and that sort of platform of, you know, being a Step 5 player, and you know, that attention that it brings. You've got those sort of young players looking to impress and make their mark. But then at the other end of the spectrum, you know, you've got the older boys like Jamie Coyle. He's 41, the Whitstable player manager, and this will be his last hurrah. He says win or lose, that's going to be him hanging up the boots, and not a bad place to retire. I think you always get that every year as well. It always seems to be a sort of a player who's kind of using it as his last game to you know, try and go out on a high on the great stage in this country.
It's always an exciting game. So always looking forward to it. And it seems odd because we've had some playoffs, and we've still got some playoffs to go. The season just seems elongated this season. I did a full roundup of winners and losers in the opener, but I suppose we should mention specifically the National League, because we knew Barnet were going to be the champions. They did it in fine style, but still on Monday, that final day, there were some twists and turns, and indeed some very nervous waits for certain clubs. Dagenham and Redbridge and Maidenhead United, the sides to be dealt relegation, to join Ebbsfleet and AFC Fylde. And then the playoffs, of course, have set up, well, they're set up with some great intrigue coming ahead. The National League, I think, has probably been one of the most exciting I can remember ever.
Yeah, it definitely was so much on that kind of final day, wasn't there, on Monday, which was unusual. Yeah, first time I've known it to be finishing on a Monday. Yeah. But it did kind of, again, give that sort of focus onto it. Yeah, there was the sort of the Barnet, can they go and get 100 points as they were kind of aiming for? And as they went, you know, up at Fylde, and you think, well, you know, they've been on, have Barnet been in party mode all week? I know they sort of had quite a lot of the week off, having spent Dean Brennan last week, but they still went up there and did the job and got, you know, became Centurions, the first time a Barnet side's got over 100 points in the league, which Dean was so kind of keen to do, and which they had a target set on their set around their training, around their stadium, on the back of his office door, and in the medical room and the dressing room. They had a countdown, but I suppose it's a count up to 100 points that they were trying to get off. They had sort of a bit of a tricky period in Barnet terms, where they had a couple of results over Christmas where they didn't win, I think, for three games, and they just to sort of refocus the players, they put up a count up to try and get 100 points and give them a target and focus everybody's minds, and they've obviously gone through that. So that was one part of the story on Monday, but obviously, as you say, the other bit was kind of down the bottom was a big focus, and interesting day where I know Braintree were kind of technically could have gone down if there'd been a massive goal swing, but they were safe. But really, it was between those three, wasn't it? Maidenhead, Dagenham, and Wealdstone, and then Wealdstone racing into this lead against FC Halifax. And I was talking to Neil Gibson, the Wilson manager, for this week's paper, and I think he's sort of saying, you know, they've kind of raced into the lead. That's kind of been their hope. You know, they wanted to kind of go out really strong and start fast, and, you know, which is an obvious thing to sort of say, I suppose, but that was kind of their intent, and they certainly did that. And then the sort of news filtered through that Dagenham had gone ahead at Solihull, and he said it was kind of like an eerie sort of feeling around the ground where you're kind of doing your job, which was sort of the first part of what they had to do. And Maidenhead did win as well, but they needed the others to slip up to get out of it. But and then obviously later on, then the news filtered through that Solihull got an equaliser, and that sort of put Wealdstone safe and dropped Dagenham back into the relegation zone, which, you know, after their massive win in the penultimate game against Altrincham, they beat 6-1 and really given themselves a chance to put it in their hands. And we've been actually in great form going into it. They'd only lost one game in eight going into that final day. And it was one of those that had, Andy Mitchell, who's a regular for us, was at the game, and he's doing saying, "I just don't know how Dagenham didn't win it." And I was having a look. I was watching some of the game, flicking between the games myself, and you know, they had some great chances. Dagenham at the end, it was quite unbelievable when the ball wasn't. It's the ball going across, you think, oh, there we go. You kind of have to sort of adjust your eyes when the ball doesn't go in the net. You think, you can't work out quite what you've seen. And there's a couple of really big chances for them to get there, to get that goal that they needed to stay up. But sometimes it's not meant to be for one club. And obviously Dagenham ended up for the drop, and Wealdstone scenes of jubilation all on the pitch and celebrating and you know, and achieving that goal of survival, which is what Neil Gibson came in to do when he replaced Matt Taylor a few months ago. So, yeah, that was a big afternoon down there at the bottom. And then there was the sort of straight shootout at the for that final playoff spot of Southend up at Gateshead. Sort of funny how it works out when the two teams that can get in there, and also Southend had it in their hands from going into that day. They knew a point would be enough to hold off Gateshead. But it was, yeah, winner takes it all as such. Gateshead did have to win to knock Southend out of it, but they played out a draw, and Southend have not snuck in there. That's probably not fair, but they've got in on that last and that seventh place spot, and Gateshead are missing out and licking their wounds with, you know, obviously a few difficult things happening at the club. The takeover hasn't gone through and so far, and what's kind of happening there, and yeah, a bit of a difficult afternoon for the Heed.
Yeah, it's never easy being a non-league fan, particularly not a Gateshead fan in recent seasons. Obviously, now we've got those playoffs set up. Before we record again next week, well, we'd have had the eliminators in the National League. Oldham Athletic hosting FC Halifax for the chance to travel to York, and Rochdale hosting Southend for their respective semi-final against Forest Green Rovers. Whatever, I'm predicting very cagey, tight games all round.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll see that. And we also, I think we've seen from the National League North and South playoffs that you also don't know what's going to happen. Yeah, well, all through the playoffs, all through the divisions, really. You know, and a few sort of second places have kind of gone up, but not all of them, that's for sure. So, you know, there are going to be, there are going to be intriguing games, and it is going to be, you know, you look at that Bournemouth Dorking eliminator in the National League South, and people saying Dorking how in control they were of the game, red card, and suddenly it's all spun round, and they're, you know, not long later their season's over, and Bournemouth have marched on. Then Bournemouth have gone to Torquay and won there, and are in the final. And it's going to be more of the same in the step one player. So we say really sort of drawn out this year because of, you know, getting the final at Wembley and that sort of availability. So the eliminators this week, semi-finals a week after, which gives time for recovery and all that kind of stuff. But that would be no good to these teams. You know, these four in it, as you say, Oldham hosting Halifax, Rochdale, we'll welcome Southend, and it's all about however you get through. It doesn't matter necessarily how you play. It's just trying to find those answers to get the ball in the net more times than the opposition.
And as we've seen from so many playoffs already this year, it's not being switched on for 90 minutes. You probably need to be switched on for a good 100 minutes, if not more, before it even goes into extra time and penalties.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely for the long haul. And I think it's, you know, as a fan who's seen my team go through the playoffs, I think sometimes you know, it's nice to be able to watch and not have to all that sort of stress, because there is so much stress and tension and jeopardy, and you know, these games drift into, you know, late on when they're tired or even into extra time, and it is just that one moment that can decide everything. And you know, they are great for excitement and drama and tension, but if it's your team in there, it's that added layer of stress and pressure as well.
Yeah, even more stress and pressure, though, I guess, for a number of those playoffs that in certain leagues, which still haven't got to the playoffs. There's still one uncertainty as to who's going to play in those playoffs. It isn't great for football. There's not a lot we can add from what we've added in previous weeks because it's still ongoing, isn't it? All I can say is I'd imagine having a holiday as a sports lawyer probably isn't allowed at this time of year.
Yeah, as you say, dragging on, and there's the knock-on effects to all of them, isn't there, as well? You know, things that need to be done in the off-season and, you know, from allocations to everything else that goes with it. I'm sure people are trying to desperately get it sorted and, as we said before, make sure that it get things right. But, yeah, not ideal at all, not great for the clubs who might end up being in the playoffs and the players and kind of all those sort of issues. I'm sure some of them have gone off on holidays and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, not... not ideal at all, but again, needs to be make sure that everyone gets it right, I guess. So that's going to be the priority.
Yeah, I think that again is the key, isn't it? Make sure that it is right and rubber stamped rather than get it wrong and then turn around and it would really upset the whole of the pyramid, wouldn't it? But it's as you say, there'll be players that are already booked on holidays because the football season it does seem to be longer than ever. It's more difficult for managers to make sure that they've got players during the season, but to expect players to hang on for 2 or 3 weeks after the season, I think it's probably asking a little bit too much.
Yeah, exactly. There's lots of, you know, as you say, people give everything into the calendar right from when they first turn up in pre-season off the end of June. I mean, pre-season seems to start earlier every year, and you're really seeing people talking about friendlies and, you know, right throughout the sort of the pyramid, there's players talk, you know, retain lists, and if clubs not doing retain lists, players announcing that they're free agents, and, you know, you have to, there is no stop. Sometimes I think sort of, you know, everyone managers need their own sort of week's holiday, kind of national manager's holiday or something for a week or a fortnight or something, where they'll go away and no one signs anybody, and you're not allowed to look at your social media or your emails and your texts to see who's available. But obviously it doesn't work like that. Time is now. You've got to get on with it, get going, get those players in, even if you can't actually officially sign them. We obviously see that, don't we, the announcements of signings. Someone's definitely signing in the areas with a scarf above his head, and then sort of comes a little bit later when you can actually officially sign the documents, and suddenly he might have a better offer and he's gone somewhere else. So it's always an amusing sort of time of year, but yeah, if you're not sure where you're going to be, and it's a challenge, and that's going to be the challenge for the National League clubs as well, because they're going right to the 1st of June, and it's going to be, you know, how do you sort of fully set your recruitment, whether you win or lose, is going to be affected by that, and what players you can attract, because there'll be players that will be no doubt interested in moving to those clubs, but only if they're in League Two. And you know, I know managers will say, you know, we're trying to recruit for the best players we can anyway, whether we're in League Two or the National League, but it's going to be impacted by it this year. For sure, and same in National League North and South. They've got another week as well, haven't they, for their final? So it's busy. It's a supposedly a quiet time of year, but it is actually the busiest for everybody.
Yeah, definitely for administrators off the field as well. You know, trying to organise, you know, all the affiliations and sort of everybody's qualifications and everything like that as well. And it's all, yeah, we have these shouts for a mid-season winter break. We probably just need a post-season break. That would be. As you say, someone turns the Wi-Fi off for a week and everybody can just down tools, nice. and have a breather. But then you get some mad fools that were managers and decide that they've had a little breather, or maybe they were players and they've seen how their managers over the years have aged so quickly when they've been managers, and they think, I'll give that a go, and the managerial merry-go-round is in. It's in summer mode, definitely. It's hard to keep up. We started the week with ex-Ramgate player, among many others, Lee Martin, being given the chance at Welling United, a club with a great track record with former young coaches. I'm thinking Ady Pennock and Jamie Day, both getting early opportunities to take on a role there. And they've both gone on to great success, both in this country and overseas as well. So, you know, maybe that Welling is the perfect shop window to begin your career.
Yeah, and also obviously a club that, you know, is going to want to go in and have that big sort of impact in after their difficult season of relegation, and it'll be a chance for a reset. And You know, obviously, say someone very experienced, been part of promotions through his career and big occasions, and it's translating that now into the dugout. And I think it's, you know, I take it as a sign now of my arm getting around a bit and getting on, because all these managers start, you know, they're all younger than me now, and they kind of sort of come in, well, a couple of years leave, but you know, you kind of got to start somewhere, and for so many of them, it's you know, getting that right job first of all, where you can go in, have an impact, and show what you're about, and put all those kind of ideas of that you get from your playing career, and from the good and the bad. And after years, what managers, when they say, "Oh, you know, I wish I'd known now as a player what I know now, and you know how it would have been different, possibly." And yeah, but it's a great challenge for all of them, and who are going into it this year. And you say Lee's one, he's taking that plunge.
Yeah, and you mentioned reset there. I think Dulwich Hamlet called theirs a reboot. Their new man in is Mark Dacey, known at the club for his time as assistant under Gavin Rose, but more recently made his mark in recent seasons as gaffer in his own right at Seven Oaks Town, SE Dons, and most recently earlier this year at Rayners Lane. Again, maybe more of an unknown quantity at this level than many would have expected Dulwich to a point, but it certainly sets out a statement from the club and the sort of, you know, direction they want to be heading.
Yeah, and someone who's done, you know, been as impressed, hasn't he, in his roles as well, and he's getting that chance, and it's nice to see people kind of get those opportunities. And as you say, again, a reset, a reboot, however you want to call it, it's, you know, what the club's saying they really need. Yeah, not a good year at all. Yes, they've sort of stayed up, haven't they? But yeah, five points above it, and they kind of probably weren't really looking like in any sort of real danger, I guess, of kind of going down. But it is, an opportunity now for them to reset, because we, you know, see what the club's potential can be, and see with their you know, incredible crowds, and you know, they've been sort of a model for from that sort of point of view, haven't they? Of increasing interest in your club, and you know, they obviously seem pretty determined to get it right on the pitch as well, and kind of get them back up challenging to get into step two. But a tough division there, really. You know, look at Billericay, obviously they're disappointed of missing out by one goal. You know, incredible to think that that's how close they were to the title, and then obviously they've lost in the playoffs to Dover and Dartford again. You know, they had a chance to win it on the final day, and didn't happen for them. And they've got to the final, having turned it around against Cray. It looked like they were heading out, turned the semi-final around against Cray, but Dover have kind of come through and knocked both of them off, Billericay and then Dartford. And you know, they're a club that everyone will be kind of looking at, because you know, they had a dreadful few years from sort of kind of COVID in the National League. They've had a couple of relegations and struggling between that as well, and they've come down. Jake LaBerle, who's been around you know, quite a bit, and worked alongside managers like John Steele, and he was obviously at Dover before with Chris Kinnear, and their kind of real success when they were getting in the playoffs, you know, winning promotions from the National League South, and even getting in the playoffs in the National League and pushing to get into the Football League, and he was part of that. But this was actually his first sort of number one job as such, and he's gone in there and had a great impact and put smiles back on faces and got people enjoying watching their team again down in Dover and rewarded promotion at the end. And he was kind of joking, I spoke to him as well, he's kind of joking, he was hoping to have a nice sort of quiet summer and just retain some of the players and build again, but here they are preparing for life back in step two. It's going back to sort of the other managers sort of getting into it. That's what they all want to be doing, and they want to be achieving and striving to do the best they can.
And it is, when we speak to managers week in, week out, it is the ones that manage to create that vibe in the dressing room. That's where the success comes from. It's not necessarily the best players, best budget, best facilities or anything like that. It's the ones that go to work, as it is work, but it doesn't feel like work, and they enjoy it, don't they? So I'm guessing, you know, elsewhere, Liam Friend stepped up from player coach at Herne Bay into the gaffer's coat, his first manager's job. Hythe Town have also also gone young with the appointment of Ira Jackson, all expecting for big impact with these people. Worthing United, there's a new joint management team, Glenn Souter returning alongside Mike Curran and Pat Sutcliffe's the new manager at Canterbury City. George Christou, he's the latest manager for Basildon United, and the big name appointment of the week, Peter Taylor at Canvey Island. Retirement clearly not suiting him.
No, I mean, that is... I think when you sort of hear him speak about, you know, how much he loves his football, and that just sort of shows that he, his management, as we often say, you know, there's something kind of slightly wrong with all of them, that they want to go put themselves through it, and it's obviously something that gets under their skin, and clearly that is with Peter Taylor, because he, he's taken on a club that's not had the greatest seasons, really having, you know, they had the promotion, you know, in recent years, and didn't quite end up how they would have hoped this year. Again, sort of level on points at Dulwich, finishing 17th, but an opportunity for him to go in there and bring all his experience to it and hopefully get them climbing up the table for them next season.
Yeah, and as well as people coming in, we had some big departures this week. Most notably, just before we spoke, Declan and Redbridge confirming they've terminated the contract of Lewis Young. And we also saw Phil Brown and Neil McDonald departing from Kidderminster Harriers, highlighting, really, those fine managers, fine margins in football. Because, both clubs had disappointing ends to their seasons, but both hard fought to the end in both respects, and well, fingernails really from what could be termed success.
Yeah, exactly that. And as I said a minute ago, you know, Dagenham actually finished the season quite well, but it wasn't enough. And see, there was, you know, lots of sort of understandable anger and frustration from the fans at the final whistle from Dagenham, because it's been a pretty dreadful second half of the season, particularly. Let Ben Shrevens go, and they've got him into the FA Cup third round, and then it's kind of just not. It went on a pretty downward spiral after that, and yes, they recovered their form, but it was, you know, kind of from a while ago. People you sort of talked to in the game sort of saying, you know, could see Dagenham going, and that's kind of how it's ended up, and I don't know Lewis Young. Must have not spoken to him, but obviously, no doubt you've been putting his best in and trying, and sometimes it just doesn't happen for you. And obviously the fans weren't sort of united on it either. So it's, you know, again, an opportunity for somebody to go in there and try and hit the reset button and get a proud club on the up again. I think there's been things going off the field as well, isn't there? But I hope they can kind of get that aligned. And as you say, Kidderminster, the fine margins. They went up to Southport on that final day of the season, with it in their own destiny, title destiny in their own hands, and had their slip up there, which allowed Brattley to steal in and take the title, and that's really hard to recover from. And it was sort of interesting, that kind of dynamic last, you know, on Sunday, where they had Chester, and Chester came in on the back of a dramatic late win at home. I think it was over 4,000 at the Diva Stadium for their eliminator against Buxton. First time the club's won a playoff game, incredibly, which was kind of a big thing. That I spoke to manager Callum McIntyre in the aftermath of that, and in the build up to the Kidderminster game, said, you know, that was a big monkey off our back. That was a really important thing, just to kind of, you know, rightly or wrongly, people have questioned whether they can turn up in big games, and they sort of felt like they answered that pretty emphatically. And you know, it's interesting, isn't it, how you kind of come in on that sort of momentum and that wave of, you know, feeling good. You've got one win in the bag. Your playoff campaign's up and running. You kind of go into the club who has, you know, been sitting there dwelling on it all week of sort of missing out on the title. And Kidderminster went ahead, but Chester have come from behind. And again, talk about fine margins. Ball goes in, whizzes into the net with 8 minutes to go, and can be hard to recover from when the goals are that late in the game. And Phil Brown's moving on. But as we always say, a circle of life in football, you know, there's a lot of managers who will fancy that Kidderminster job, for absolutely, you know, 100%. And they, a club like that, the way they're kind of set up, you know, still full time, but you know where they're standing in the area and community where people are Kidderminster fans. You know, they're not sort of Premier League fans, and they sort of go and watch their local club. They are Kiddie fans, and I've seen their team play in the Football League. That's obviously where they ultimately want to get back, but they're struggling to get back into the National League and establish themselves there. And actually came down last year and were close to getting it. But there'll be a lot of managers who will really fancy that. You'll probably take that pick from quite a few managers who would love to get in there and be the ones to make it a happier ending next season.
Yeah, well, there's a few more that have, got an opportunity. Moving out elsewhere, we saw Billy Wood resign at Lancing. Poulton Rovers parted company with Ray Johnson, and Andy Leese departed Hayes and Yedding United. A couple of in and outs as well. Pedro Pesqueira stepped down at Hillingdon Borough to be replaced by Gary Putz. And Craig Laird was the latest to lose his job at Bridgewater, with former Bristol Manor Farm boss Lee Leshenko returning to football to take his place. I'm going to have to back up my phone and contacts for sure, and try and get my head around who's going to be playing in what league, who's going to be managing where, and who signed for what club for the third time, because they previously announced, as you said earlier, that they were signing for somebody else until somebody else came in with a nicer looking shirt.
Well, this is it. I mean, I think people say, "Oh, you have your feet up now in the summer." You think, "No, this is." But if I switch off for a week in the summer, you come back and you can be sort of, I can't remember who it was. It was like about 3 weeks into the season. I think, "Hold on, when did he sign for them? I didn't even see that happen." And it's because I was away that week in the summer. It's so hard to keep up with everything. There's so much going on, and that is why we love it, though, isn't it? You know, there's always something to talk about in non-league football.
There's always something to talk about. Always plenty to fill out the non-league paper. But I guess a preview of those playoffs, non-league finals day. Anything else we can expect to read in this weekend's non-league paper?
Yeah, lots of previews ahead of obviously Sunday and the eliminators next week. We look back on that final day of the National League season. Hearing from all the Bank Holiday Monday playoff winners at step 3 and 4 and Sunday as well, the Isthmian South Central final that was on that day that Uxbridge got through. So yeah, lots of playoff reaction. Also caught up with the winners from last Saturday as well. People like Ed Upson who scored the winning goal for Berrytown, his hometown club. What a great story that was. To have gone and had the career that he had. He's come back to Bury and shown his class on the bus. I've seen him a few times. He always shows his class, but then to curl in a winner late on in the playoff final was a special moment for him. So we've got all that in there. Callum McIntyre at Chester, and we've got a piece on with a non-league boy done good, Michael Cheek, who took a long time to get to the Football League. Wonder if his chance would ever fully present itself. Obviously got promoted with Bromley last season. Had their incredible year. Someone who'd been scoring goals for seemingly forever in non-league football and never had that opportunity. It kind of makes you question why. And people say, "Oh, can he?" Imagine people saying, "Can he step up?" Well, he's gone and done that. He's gone and got the League Two Golden Boot in his first season there, and I think might even won Player of the Year. So, John Lyons from the Football League paper has caught up with him, saying to all players, all strikers out there, don't give up. It can happen even in the even on the back nine of your supposed back nine of your career.
Well, I don't know. It's probably too late for me to sign now, isn't it, for non-league final day? But potentially.
Yeah, some people, it might be too late.
I'd just stay in the clubhouse. That's fine.
You know, take your boots. Take your boots to Wembley. Take your shin pads. Wow. You never know. Take your coat as well, just in case it's cold. Couple of years ago, caught you out of that day, didn't it? It did catch you. Caught me out. I had to go back to the car and get a second coat.
Extra layers going on as we speak.
Yeah, that sort of haunts me. Not only was it in an empty stadium, which was no fun either, but it was freezing cold. So
we couldn't
looking forward to a
together.
Warmer Wembley and a fuller Wembley on Sunday.
Right, and looking forward to reading the non-league paper while I'm there. Thanks as ever, Matt. Have a great weekend. Speak to you again soon.
Thanks, Tim.
And then it is it for this week. But before I go, a little ask. As most know, this is a labour of love, and it has been for 2 decades now. The small ads at the front of the pod go straight to our hosted provider, Audio Boom, to offset costs so we don't earn from this show in monetary terms, just in love and pride. If you've got this far into the show, you probably like what we do, so if you'd like to show your appreciation, it would be great if you could pledge some sponsorship for a cause very close to my heart. My day job is as fundraising manager of Oakhaven Hospice down in the New Forest, an independent charity that makes memories for those facing end-of-life care. On Saturday the 17th of May, with my wife alongside me and some 600-plus other walkers, I will be walking 26 miles from Sandbanks Pool along the coastal path to the hospice in Lymington to raise funds for the hospice, who said the close season was quiet. Of the £9 million the hospice needs each year to run, only 11% comes from government grants, so the rest has to be raised somehow, and every little contribution helps. To find out more, you can sponsor us at www.justgiving.com/team/fuel, F-U-E-L-L. That's www.justgiving.com/team/fuel, F-U-E-L-L. Your support is very much appreciated. Don't forget you can get involved with the show on social media at Non-League Show and myself there at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L. And as ever, you can find us every week on Audio Boom and on Apple Podcasts, but also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, Castbox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Player FM, Podcast Addict, Podchaser via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your football. Thank you and goodbye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
L-E-T-E-N-E-Z. Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18+. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.